You're listening to a podcast hosted by Med Learning Group.
Welcome to the Relief Primary Care SmartCast Microlearning Podcast Series hosted by Med Learning Group. My name is Sylvia Hanna, Medical Director at Med Learning Group, and I will be the host of today's podcast, which is one of six podcasts. In this series, we will be covering the role of GLP-1 receptor agonists in the care of patients with type 2 diabetes. In today's podcast, we will discuss weight management in patients with type 2 diabetes. Joining me today is Davida F. Kruger, a certified nurse practitioner in the Division of Endocrinology, Diabetes, Bone, and Mineral Disease at Henry Ford Health in Detroit, Michigan. Welcome, Ms. Kruger. It's so good to have you with us today.
I'm glad to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. So, Davida, can you explain the rationale for including a weight-centric approach in type 2 diabetes management?
Absolutely. I think to best understand that, let's first start by talking about the fact that obesity is much more complex than just having extra body weight, although that is what people see and tend to focus on. To best understand obesity, it's really important to understand that it's a state of energy dysregulation that is characterized by an impaired appetite hormone signaling and excess adiposity. It is a very complex chronic disease. And although the American Medical Association has classified obesity as a disease, it is still not well recognized as such, and I don't think we talk about it as healthcare providers enough. So what we know about individuals with type 2 diabetes and people with type 2 diabetes is that there's a huge connection between obesity and type 2 diabetes. And we also know that there are 16 million patients with diabetes who are obese, and greater than 4 million of those individuals with severe obesity, BMIs greater than 40. And when we think about obesity, we do categorize it based on the BMI. So for a BMI of greater than 25 or less than 30, we consider that as overweight. Greater than 30, but less than 34.9 is class 1 obesity. 35 to 39.9 is class 2 obesity. And greater than 40 is considered class 3 obesity. So we think about the international guidelines. They do recommend now in 2023, choosing anti-hyperglycemic therapy based on the presence or absence of cardiovascular disease, renal disease, and obesity. And why is that shift? Because we now have medications that can not only lower the A1C, but help with cardiovascular disease, renal disease, and the key here, obesity. So the 2023 American Diabetes Association standards of care have a great emphasis on choosing medications that provide weight loss rather than weight gain, a huge shift in how we think about type 2 diabetes. And with the increasing prevalence of both diabetes and obesity, both in the United States and across the world, agents for type 2 diabetes associated with potent weight loss are increasingly important. And what we know is that weight gain worsens insulin resistance. Insulin resistance really interferes with us controlling that individual's type 2 diabetes and sets them up for complications. So existing need for anti-hyperglycemic agents with greater A1C reduction and weight loss is the key to how we think about diabetes right now. So obesity is associated also with over 200 comorbidities, including hypertension, cardiovascular disease, gallbladder disease, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, cancer, GYN abnormalities, and pulmonary diseases such as sleep apnea. Those are things that we know are also associated with type 2 diabetes. But for those individuals with diabetes, if we focus on supporting them with weight loss, we also help with other potential comorbidities and lowering that patient's risk.
Davida, weight is something many people struggle with, not just patients with type 2 diabetes. However, weight maintenance and weight loss seems to be critical in the management of diabetes, correct?
You're absolutely correct. So weight loss is a huge challenge, but then weight maintenance is another huge challenge. And it's a lifelong challenge for people who are overweight or obese. And there was a study done in 2007 by Marion Franz and her group. And she looked at all available weight loss modalities at that time. And she pawed through all kinds of charts and came up with 18,000 individuals that she included in her review. And what they concluded is that all of the therapies that were available in the past at that time, 2007, they only provided about a 6-month benefit. You could see, if you looked at the charts and the graphs, you could see the weight going down with most of the therapies we had available in 2007. However, that was it. At 6 months was the major benefit. Then the weight plateaued and the weight gain was back. And this can be seen in her review, which I think is, I thought originally when I thought, oh, 2007, so long ago. But what she taught us with this review is that the therapies that we were using just weren't going to help us with maintenance. And then there's been multiple studies that have shown that a modest weight loss, like 5 to 10%, it will improve glycemia, blood pressure, lipids, the need for some of our medications. It improves mobility and quality of life, which clearly helps people with type 2 diabetes, but may not be enough given the statistics I shared with how many of our individuals are morbidly obese and need greater weight reduction. And then the Diabetes Prevention Program, they said that weight loss of about 5.5 kilograms reduced the risk of converting from impaired glucose tolerance to type 2 diabetes by 58%. And of course, in a perfect world, that's where we'd put a lot of our energy, was before people had type 2 diabetes. And this is exactly where we need to be and where we should start and work with individuals before they're diagnosed with type 2 diabetes. So we do know that weight loss in some individuals can lead to a remission, which was seen in a research study that was done by Lean et al. They looked at 300 individuals. They weren't on insulin yet. They had diabetes less than 6 years, age 20 to 65, with a BMI between 27 and 45. They were taken off all of their diabetes medications. In fact, they were actually taken off all of their antihypertensive medications as well. They were provided a liquid diet for 3 to 5 months and then slowly reintroduced food. The goal was a weight loss of 15 kilograms or more. When they looked at these individuals at 12 months, 46% of the participants in the intervention group achieved a diabetes remission, and that was defined as an A1C of less than 6.5% after greater than or equal to 2 months off of all of their anti-diabetes medications. And what they noted was the greater the weight loss, the greater the odds of the patient achieving a remission. Again, before early on in the diabetes, we really need to focus on weight reduction. But in 2023, we do have diabetes medications that have the added benefit of weight reduction while improving A1C and a cardiovascular benefit. So for all of these reasons, the focus for caring for individuals with type 2 diabetes has shifted to being weight-centric.
DaVita, diabetes care was highly glucose-centric. Recently, it seems that diabetes care is moving toward weight-centric focus to treat and prevent type 2 diabetes. Can you discuss this shift in treatment paradigm?
Absolutely. You know, I talked a little bit about putting people in remissions. I've talked a little bit about the fact that there's research that shows that earlier on, the better in terms of preventing diabetes. But as a healthcare provider, and I've been engaged in diabetes care for over 40 years, when we think about type 2 diabetes, we wait until we have hyperglycemia, insulin resistance, adiposity. And then we say, oh, no, we have to do something and we have to do it now. And so what the focus is, and part of that focus, I have to say, was because we didn't have medications that we could intervene and do much more. But now that we do, we have to move that shift from glucose-centric approach to when the patient comes to us and they already have diabetes, they already have complications, and we need to start thinking about a weight-centric approach, an upstream, if you will, so that we talk to those patients long before they have diabetes. And what we know is before the diagnosis of diabetes, people have insulin resistance and the beta cell is being destroyed for probably 10 years. So if we could intervene with weight loss at that point, before the patient has diabetes, when they have some insulin resistance or pre-diabetes, we would really be doing a great service for those patients. And perhaps we could prevent the onset of type 2 diabetes for many more people. So glucose-centric, we need to move that upstream to a weight-centric approach.
We certainly do. Can you discuss the ADA standards of care for obesity and weight management?
Absolutely. So again, I mentioned that I've been involved in diabetes for more than 40 years because of the difference of the therapies we now have for people with type 2 diabetes. And it really is very exciting. We now have two classes of medications. One's called a GLP-1 receptor agonist and the other one an SGLT2 inhibitor. And that they not only provide A1C reduction, greater time in range, they have a cardiovascular and kidney benefit, but they are associated with weight loss. So the ADA standards of the 2023 ADA, American Diabetes Association Standards of Care, say that when choosing glucose-lowering medications for patients with type 2 diabetes and overweight or obesity, consider a medication's effect on weight. So we don't use insulin until later on because insulin, sulfonylureas, they cause weight gain. And we now have these medications, which do have better A1C reduction with weight loss. And whenever possible, minimize medications for conditions that are associated with weight gain. And I always think of like antidepressants. There are some that cause weight gain and some that are weight neutral. And if you can pick one that's weight neutral, please do. And then weight loss medications are effective as adjunct to diet, physical activity, and behavioral counseling for people with type 2 diabetes and BMIs greater than 27%. But these medications can be used for type 2 diabetes and have the potential for helping with weight reduction. But we always want to make sure that we offer an opportunity to see a dietitian. Diabetes educators talk about behavioral counseling, support that patient to be successful in utilizing some of these new medications. And what has been noted, which I think is really interesting, is when we use some of these medications that have the benefit of weight reduction, it's typically looking at weight reduction of greater than or equal to 5%. And if the patient's been able to achieve that weight loss after 3 months of use, typically if we keep them on these medications, they will be successful for greater weight reduction. And I think that's really important to support that patient so that they get those benefits right up front and you keep supporting them to be successful.
DeVita, weight can be a sensitive topic. Do you find that patients approach the topic proactively or do they wait for the healthcare team to address it first?
I think that's a mixed bag. So I have people who run in and ask questions. They heard about a new medication or they heard about something new. They want to discuss it or something's happening in their life and they really want to talk about weight loss. And then I have patients who, even if I broach the subject, they're not ready to discuss it. However, the important thing about why I try to be more proactive is because I have something to offer those individuals. But there was an NHANES study that looked at individuals who have BMI greater than 30. And of those individuals, they all knew that their BMI was greater than 30. And about 90% of them said and recognized that they were overweight. About 90% of those individuals also wanted to lose weight. And 60% of them had tried to lose weight on their own in the last 12 months and they hadn't been successful. However, only about 3% of those individuals actually sought assistance and help. And that's why I really think it's really important that the healthcare provider understand the importance of weight loss and that there are medications that can help and support our patients and to appropriately approach the patient. And if the patient's not ready to discuss it, we'll know. But if they are, we have medications, we have support that can help that patient be successful in the area of weight loss and manage their diabetes.
How do you initiate that discussion with a patient that may have obesity?
Well, you know, I again think that it's really the patient's comfort and sensitivity. And there are different scripts. We all have different ways that we approach patients. But one of the things that you might say in your own words is now a good time for us to discuss how your weight and health may be affecting each other and how we can work together on this. And if the patient says yes, you might want to try some open-ended questions like, what are concerns you most about your weight? What is the single most important outcome that you hope to achieve with weight loss? While I'm concerned about, you know, cardiovascular disease, they may be concerned about an event they want to go to, and that's what's motivating them to talk with me. And then finding out what stands in their way of achieving their outcomes and what are the first steps they're willing or able to do, and what impact will the changes we have discussed have on their life. And so obesity is a chronic problem, and what support systems do they have in place, and what things can I help them with? And then, you know, we have to acknowledge their concerns, acknowledge where they're at, acknowledge what they're able and willing to do, and understand that each patient is an individual needs and how they approach their journey with obesity will be different. And then if the patient is not willing to discuss it at this time, doesn't want to discuss it, leaving that door open for the future to see if, again, the next visit, or to say, you know, if your mind changes, you know, I'm here, please make an appointment. We can have a further discussion.
The ADA has recommendations regarding weight assessment. Can you please discuss and share some examples of how you use these in your practice?
Sure. You know, again, I think how we approach a patient, how we handle the subject of weight loss is a very sensitive but changing idea. And I think we have to be open and sensitive to the patients. We finally have medications that are effective and available. And it's certainly a mix of patients asking for help, but more and more, I try to be proactive in offering these therapies. The American Diabetes Association suggests that we use patient-centered, non-judgmental language that does foster collaborative care between the patient and the provider, including first language such as people language, such as person with obesity rather than obese person. And we do that with diabetes. We don't say the person is diabetic. We say the person has diabetes. Same thing for obesity. And we want to make sure that we get a weight, height measurement, and we calculate the BMI when we start the therapy, not only because we need it as part of the chart and for approval sometimes for medications, but so that the patient can see the progress they're making and we can help them with a trajectory of where we hope they're going to go with their journey. And then based on clinical considerations, such as other comorbids, heart failure, significant unexplained weight loss or weight gain, we may want to monitor and evaluate more frequently. And accommodations need to be made to provide privacy during the weighing situation. We really want to be sensitive to weighing a patient. And while relatively small weight loss, approximately 3 to 7 of baseline weight, improves glycemia and other intermediates such as cardiovascular risks, a larger sustained weight of greater than 10% or more than that really has the greater benefits, including disease modification effects and possibly remission as type 2 diabetes in studies that I've already shared, and can improve long-term cardiovascular outcome and mortality. And often I use something that's known in the obesity world as the 5A approaches when I'm approaching a patient to help them with their diabetes and weight loss.
Can you tell us a little bit more about this 5A's approach?
Oh, of course. So you want to ask the patient for permission. Would you be willing to discuss your weight and treatment options? And you want to assess the prior medical history, other medications the patient has tried for weight loss, family history of obesity, review food intake, current activity, sleep duration, and stressors, advise on treatment options so the patient knows what's available, how they work, and the benefits they could provide. Agree to utilize motivational interviewing and shared decision-making. And that shared decision-making is so important because ultimately at the end of the day, it is the patient's decision. And as I like to say to my patients, the good news is I don't go home with you at night. So it is really the decision-making and what the patient is able and willing to do to develop a plan of treatment from options discussed, and then assist during the follow-up visits to staying on track and reassessing for needed changes in the treatment plan, and then provide referrals, support systems, and resources as needed so that the patient can be successful.
Thank you, Davina. That was very informative. We learned a lot today regarding management of weight in patients with type 2 diabetes. And thank you to our listeners for joining us. We hope you will join us for the other podcasts in this series. This podcast was brought to you by MedLearning Group. MedLearning Group is accredited by the Accreditation Council for Continuing Medical Education to provide continuing medical education for physicians. This CME activity was planned and produced in accordance with the ACCME Essentials. I would like to give a special thank you to our grant supporter, Novo Nordisk, who provided an unrestricted educational grant for this activity.